From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is going to be made on November 15th. That's deadline day for a commission to decide whether your state lawmakers should get a pay raise, maybe a big one. That's a week after Election Day, and there's been some criticism that the decision on a pay raise comes after voters decide whom they want in office. But interestingly, there's been some debate among lawmakers themselves about whether it's time for a raise. Here's why. First of all, the commission is looking at a raise up to 47% for state lawmakers. They haven't gotten a raise since 1999. The base pay would go from $79.5 to about $113,000 per year, or it could be a raise of a smaller percentage. But this isn't only about paying lawmakers more. It's about ethics reform, too. Many of the supporters of ethics reform say a pay raise should happen, and it must be tied to a new cap on outside income. For example, the Poughkeepsie Journal said the following in an editorial, quote, "Give them the raise. In return, lawmakers should have to drop or at least greatly reduce their outside income and approve other long-delayed and even neglected efforts aimed at bringing ethics reform to Albany," end quote. Would this work? Is this the way to finally wipe out corruption in Albany? Our guests are going to debate that this hour, including a member of the State Assembly. That's Mark Johns, a Republican who is with us in office. Assemblyman, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sam Fedeli's here. He's a citizen who's worked for reform of various kinds for a long time, including campaign finance reform, which I suspect will come up among other things. Nice to see you, Sam.
Good afternoon, Evan.
And on the line with us is Susan Lerner. She's the executive director of Common Cause New York. Susan, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be with you.
Before we get going on that, a brief interruption from my colleague Veronica Volk from the newsroom. Hi, Veronica.
Hey, Evan. What's up?
Well, you know, we're doing a talk show. We do this every Monday to Friday, 2 hours a day.
Yes, we do.
500 hours a year or so.
Is that right?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so I'm really excited to listen to this conversation. Connections is obviously a regular part of my day here in the WXXI newsroom. And if you're listening, it's a regular part of your day as well. You know, this is a really good opportunity for us to have these level conversations about things that influence us on the local, regional, and state level. So just take a couple seconds out from your lunch hour. If you're out, you know, maybe getting a sandwich, or if you're hanging out at home, just dial 454-6300 or 1-800-295-9994. You can also go online at WXXI.org. And if you're listening in the Finger Lakes, let us not forget our partners at WEOS. You can go to WEOS.org. We're all one big public media family. But just take a couple minutes and think about how much this program and these conversations and this connection means to you. And pledge your support.
I see what you did
there. I know, right?
Yeah, I
tried.
I saw that.
I planned that out. That's actually written in my notes right now.
Oh, God, so bad.
No, I know. But anyway, just on a more serious note, it's really important to us that we be able to continue to run this program and to have these conversations. And I know it's important to you, too. So just take a couple minutes out of your day and consider becoming a sustaining member, because it helps us plan for the future. And I know, Evan, you have a pretty big project coming up, and these kinds of things aren't possible without your support. So thanks so much if you have already. And if you haven't, it'll only take a couple seconds, 454-6300 or WXXI.org.
Thank you, Veronica Volk.
You're welcome, Evan.
She's going to head back to the newsroom where your member dollars help support. And we're going to continue this conversation, and I'm going to start with Assemblyman Mark Johns. Mark, time for a raise for you?
Well, Evan, I voted against the raise.
You voted against it.
I voted against it because, number one, it's the wrong way to go about it. We voted on this pay raise as part of the 2015 budget. Remember, we voted on that on April 1st at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean,
April 1st, what year?
April 1st, 2015.
Okay, yeah, year and a half ago.
Yeah, right. Some people think it was this year. It was April 1st, 2015, and we voted on it 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, I guess when they thought no one would be paying attention. And I was one of only two people that stood up on the floor saying that this does not look good. It doesn't pass the smell test. So if you want to raise, whether it's 47% or 27%, you should vote on it. And then let the voters decide when they go to the poll this November 8th.
Are you bothered by the commission getting a deadline of a week after the election, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I read the bill. You know, if you're in the minority, you actually read the bills. And I stood up and said, this does not look good. I mean, 1 week, you took over a year and a half to decide how big the pay raise should be. And these are political appointees on the commission. What do you think they're going to come up with?
All right. So, Susan Lerner, I, from what I've read from interviews with you in other places, you've got a bit of a different take. You seem to fall more in line with the Poughkeepsie Journal and others who've said this should be considered if it's tied to ethics reform. What do you think?
Exactly. Well, look, it's just good management practice to regularly review everybody's compensation. The real problem here is how long it's taken, because it has become politically fraught, as the assembly member points out. And instead of having a sensible management determination made, it becomes a political football. So everybody has kicked that football down the road because of exactly what the assembly member is pointing to. So I think that it is important that a commission has been appointed. I think that this is something which should happen on a regular basis. Every 4 years, there ought to be a review top to bottom. I don't think that anybody expects that public salaries are going to keep pace with private salaries, but there shouldn't be this kind of a gap where it's taken almost 20 years to have a salary review. So good management practice requires there be a review and there be some, at least, cost of living increases which are appropriate. Now, at the same time, I believe that the legislature should make it very clear to the voters that they understand who they work for, and they should work for the voters and the voters only. And that means banning or significantly limiting outside income. And there are various ways in which this could be done, but I think it's very important that people understand that the legislature understands who that they put the voters first. There's an interesting political science equation that shows that when you raise the salaries, the temptation for corruption lowers. We also think that at the same time, if there's going to be a raise, that the salary should be uniform, and the practice of these administrative stipends, which in New York are called Lulus, should be abolished. You do your basic work, whether you're a chair of a committee or you hold some other position, and you get your solid salary, and that covers everything you're expected to do. Perhaps for the speaker or the president of the Senate, where there really are significant additional responsibilities, the head of a conference, maybe a small Lulu. But for everybody else, no. This has been a way around, a dodge around the lack of salary adjustments, and it should end.
Okay, and Susan, when you say that cap on outside income, I've heard $15,000 annually as a hard cap. I've heard percentages. What's the number you like?
Well, we actually advocate for an outright ban.
A ban.
Mm-hmm. We think that there really should not be any sense of divided loyalty, even for $5,000, $10,000, or $15,000. But we would be content with the congressional model, which comes out to, I think it's about 15% of the salary. So it would be somewhere in the $20,000 range. We could live with that, but we advocate for an outright ban.
Okay. Sam Fedele is someone who's been working on the issue of money in politics and the influence of money in politics for years now. So where do you fall, first of all, on this question of a pay raise and as it relates to ethics reform and bans on outside income, Sam?
Well, I think that Susan has it pretty much right. But I do not personally have a very strong opinion about this specific pay raise. But if you raise it up a notch and take a higher level view of government in general, I think that the perception that ordinary citizens have of government at this point in the history of our country is very, very low. We're down around 10-11% at the federal level. So we need to change this. We've had, since probably the 80s, a pounding from one side of the political spectrum about shrinking government, make it small enough to drown it in the bathtub. What this does really is give people a negative sense of governance in this country, and it distracts from the importance of the decisions that need to be made. Later on, I'll go more into what put me in this position. I'm saying, yes, we need to attract the best and the brightest to government because it is critically important for all of us.
But Sam, when it comes to that low approval rating, whether it's 6 or 7% for Congress or 10% or whatever it is, it's not high. And yet incumbents win all the time. Why do incumbents always win on the state level and the congressional level if people aren't happy, Sam?
Well, incumbents have a way of, quote, bringing home the bacon for the local people. So basically, little bennies are thrown to the people. There is a lot of glad-handing done. They make appearances, and they try to make it good for their own constituents. And I guess that is part of their responsibility, to make it good for their own constituents. But when one looks at other representatives and see what is reported on them, they do not see that.
So, right. Listeners, I want to hear from you. Where do you come out on a pay raise, and would you support a pay raise if it's tied to ethics reform and a cap on outside income? 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Assemblyman Johns, cap on outside income. Susan Lerner wants, her organization wants a total cap, but they could live with the congressional model, which would be 15% of your salary. What do you think it should be? Should there be a cap?
Yeah, there should be a cap, and I voted for one that I thought was a little high. But just for the record, I have no outside income. I have no outside job.
Okay.
I treat this as a full-time job, and the constituents in the 135th know that. So I have no outside influence or outside commitments that I need to worry about. There's no conflict of interest. I work for the people of my district.
When it comes to your colleagues, you know, you've been in office for how many terms now?
It's my third term.
All right, third term. I know you've got friends in Albany and you work well with people. In fact, you're someone who has no trouble working with Democrats when you feel like you should.
Right.
But do you feel that if they have outside income, that they're compromised in some way?
Well, I think outside income can compromise you, but let's face it, outside money influences in the form of campaign contributions is probably even a higher level of influence peddling. You know, lobbying in Albany is $200 million a year. I mean, you know, like Bernie Sanders says, it's generally the person with the most money or has access to the most money that wins. You know, now
you're a Republican who just quoted Bernie Sanders?
Well, Bernie, I think, is the one that speaks out the best about it. But, you know, when you take a look at the situation, I'm in the minority, so I raise about 10% of the money that the majority does. But back in 2010, I won an upset that nobody really saw coming. And it was by basically going out door to door, you know, letting people know I'm for term limits, campaign finance reform, get rid of gerrymandered districts, legislative equality, referendum, unicameral legislature. With a unicameral legislature, we could get rid of 2/3 of the career politicians, save a ton of money in pensions, and guess what? $150 million a year in costs.
All right. So, Mark, I'm going to ask you and Susan and Sam the same question then. We're talking about lawmaker pay raises, in particular as it relates to ethics reform, as just one peg here. What's the priority list? If you could get one ethics reform piece, whatever piece you want, you can't get it all, but they're going to let you choose one, what's it going to be?
I would say the most important piece you could possibly talk about, the absolute tipping point in Albany, would be the SOLE Act. I call it S-O-L-E. It stands for Single Opportunity to Legislate Equally. It would allow every member, minority or majority member, to bring one bill to the floor every 2 years. That's one bill every term. Let's have a debate, a discussion, and then an up or down vote. And then things like term limits, real campaign finance reform, getting rid of gerrymandered districts, all the things that people sit back home, like, for instance, ride sharing, Uber and Lyft, never comes up for a vote. We allow it in New York City, but we can't allow it in Buffalo, Syracuse, and Rochester. Let's allow every member to bring up a bill. And you know what? If you don't like the bill, I understand the red button works. You can vote no.
And by the way, we could probably end up turning this whole hour into an Uber Lyft hour because people get fired up about that. But the point that you're making is it gets stalled.
Right.
Nobody can bring it up. You're especially if you're in a minority body, then you're in real trouble, right?
Well, actually, a lot of the minority bills are commandeered or taken over by the majority, so they actually get the credit, and we sign on as co-sponsors. So most of the ideas that you see for reform always come from minorities because we're allowed to think. We read the bills. We're actually the ones that discuss and debate.
People are allowed to think, Assemblymen, in the majority parties.
They're allowed to think, but they may not be allowed to stand up and debate against a bill on the floor. And keep in mind, Evan, these are some facts. We author, in the New York State Assembly, we author almost twice as many bills as the U.S. House of Representatives. We vote on less than 10% of those bills. Are you telling me that 90% of the bills that we author are just a complete waste of time? Why can't we bring some bills up? We let people vote on casino gambling. and it gets 52% at the state level. In Monroe County, Rochester area, it lost, but we let the people vote on it. If you let the people vote on term limits and some other stuff, it would get 80 to 90%. And that's how you change the Constitution, one amendment at a time. The Constitutional Convention up or down vote comes in November of next year. And if we don't start putting in some real reform, I think that may wind up passing.
All right, Susan Lerner, you get one shot, one piece of ethics reform. What's it going to be?
Boy, that's a really unfair question. I think that I would say a real ethics reform, setting standards, strengthening enforcement, having a real independent watchdog to set guidelines and to make it clear that, the small bore of chiseling is unacceptable. It's very hard to choose between ethics reform and campaign finance reform. I think that the assembly member is on to something there as well.
Okay, so those things are tied for you, tied together.
Absolutely.
Okay, Sam Fedeli, what's your top priority right now?
Well, in order for a democratic republic to function, we have to decouple the financing of elections from the need for elected officials and those who seek office to spend so much of their time asking the wealthy for money, because then indebtedness occurs. And because of that indebtedness, constituents are not represented in their bodies, in their elected councils. So unfortunately, at the state level, there's not too much we can do about that because of decisions that have been made at the federal level, Supreme Court decisions. So basically what I need to be happy, because what needs to be done in order for this democratic republic and our democratic processes to function is to get big money out of politics, break that indebtedness between not just individual legislators and their donors, but the political parties and their major donors. Because the party bosses have a lot of sway, as Mark will tell you. To break that connection, we need to have an amendment such that we can control money in elections.
All right, but we have an assembly member here. And so, Mark, you know, you're hearing the term indebtedness. Have you ever felt indebted to anybody who's contributed to you?
Well, I'm not indebted. Keep in mind, I actually raise a lot less money than a majority member. But what Sam is saying, it's not even what you raise as an individual legislator, but it's what the party raises and can spend on you. When they have hundreds of thousands of dollars that they can spend against me to say, you know, Mark is no good, and a hundred something thousand dollars to spend on my opponent saying that, you know, they're wonderful, it's not a level playing field. So what I'm suggesting is, you know, the Buffalo Bills play the San Francisco 49ers. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but we're playing the game on the same field with the same rules. And what I would like to see is an alternative public financing of campaigns. Either you take the big money in the special interest, or you take public financing. It's not going to be as much. But I won back when I did win in 2010. I was outspent 2-1, 3-1.
But nobody's ever contributed to your campaign?
Oh, yeah, people contribute.
But you say you haven't felt indebted.
No, well, I'm not indebted because the things I'm talking about right now were the things I was talking about before I got elected. So people that agree with me are saying, believe me, take a look at it. I got 100% union endorsement. The unions are agreeing with me, and I happen to be a Republican. So, you know, and the good government groups, although they don't endorse people, agree with my ideas.
All right. So here's why I asked that question, because this is always the chicken and egg question that people have. And I'm sort of playing devil's advocate here. But Sam is suggesting that when money must be raised, when you hear members of Congress, for example, spending a third of their time on the phone or more asking for dollars, state lawmakers have to spend time glad handing, asking for dollars. When that happens, Sam used the term indebtedness, and a lot of people agree. What you're suggesting is you are bringing up issues that matter as a part of your campaign for office, and those who agree with you are going to donate, that you're not taking the money and then saying, what do you want me to do with it? You're saying, here's what I plan to do. Who wants to contribute to it? And that would lessen, I think, some of the idea of Sam's argument or good government argument, that saying that you know, we have to change the system. Because you're saying you don't feel indebted.
But, Evan, well, I mean, you know, in all honesty, it's very human. And where I think we see the most impact of campaign dollars is not in a quid pro quo indebtedness, although, unfortunately, sometimes that happens. What we see is an influence on human nature. Right? If you have a favorite uncle who gives you a $100 check when you're a kid for every birthday, when that uncle comes through the door, you smile. So you have a stronger relationship with your campaign donors, whether you are doing it consciously or not. And the idea is, with the kind of campaign finance which the assembly member is talking about and which we have been advocating for, you know, throughout the state, what you're doing is you're ensuring that the small donor is the one who has the influence. It's the voters. It's allowing assembly members like Assemblymember Johns to concentrate on his constituents and not on the large dollar lobbyist contributors with fundraisers in Albany.
Okay.
And it's helping good legislators balance against that natural inclination that you want to do good things for people who do good things for you.
Right, but Evan, and Susan is right, but let me just add this in. Every bill that comes to the assembly floor passes. That's not a coincidence. We haven't had a bill come up to the assembly floor and fail to pass in decades. So the deals are cut in advance. I mean, they're in conference. They argue and fight among themselves. But when the majority comes out and says this bill must pass, that bill will pass. So every single bill that comes to the floor passes, and way more than half, about two-thirds of the bills we pass, never even come up for a vote in the Senate.
Before I let you go, Susan Lerner from Common Cause New York here, when it comes to a pay raise for lawmakers, do you have an expectation of what's going to happen on November 15th?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting to watch the discussions that's going on in the commission. I do think, given the extraordinary length of time without even a cost of living increase, I think we're going to see some sort of an increase that is recommended on November the 15th. And I apologize to you and to your listeners that I have a commitment at 1 o'clock, which requires me to sign off, but this has been a great discussion, and I want to thank you and thank the assembly member and also Sam for their thoughtful comments, and I'm looking forward to working with both of them as we try and grapple with the enormous problem of money in politics in our state.
Thank you, Susan. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Susan Lerner from Common Cause NY. Let's get our only break of the hour and come back and continue the discussion. I see some of your comments on Twitter. I'm at Evan Dawson on Twitter. You can email the program, edawson@wxxi.org. You want to call the program and weigh in. Is it time for an increase in salary for our state lawmakers, maybe a big one? The commission considering up to 47% as an increase for lawmakers. That would take them from $79,500 to $113,000 per year. And a lot of the people, like Susan Lerner, you just heard, saying if that happens, it's got to be tied to caps and outside income, much more significant caps, much more significant ethics reform. So if you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're right back. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to Shamiqua Holdsclaw, one of the greatest basketball players ever. She's coming to Rochester as the featured speaker for an annual event for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Holdsclaw battled depression and had all kinds of trauma in her childhood that helped spark that depression, and she's telling her story now, what we can learn from her next hour. Sometimes it gets so drilled into us here that we miss what we just heard. We just heard Gene Fisher, a great voice there, who says, support from public radio comes from our members, and our members are smaller in number than we would like. Veronica Volk from the newsroom is popping in real briefly to say hello because we're in the middle of a pledge drive. 9 out of 10 people listening to my voice right now are not members, and we'd like that to change, Veronica.
Yes, we would. And I don't want to take up any more time than I have to because I don't want to derail this conversation. But it's extremely important to us that you show your support during this week, because it's how we're able to continue to make this program. It's how we're able to keep the lights on, as they say, right? So call in when you get a couple seconds. It's 454-6300, 1-800-295-9994, or WXXI.org, or WEOS.org if you're down in the Finger Lakes. But it's just, it's not only a great way for you to show that you care about us, but it's also completely necessary for us to continue to do the great work that we're doing, for Evan to continue to bring you these kinds of stories. And also, if you are listening right now and you have access to Twitter, why don't you tweet at Evan or I and tell us what it is about the show that you like and why you've decided to show your support today. So give us a call, 454-6300, WXXI.org, and I'll leave you guys to this.
Thank you, Veronica Volk.
And you're welcome.
I'm Evan Dawson, and we continue with our discussion on ethics reform. And in the context of this question on whether there should be a raise for state lawmakers, whether you want them to earn more money. They haven't gotten a raise in almost two decades, and we've been talking to Assemblyman Mark Johns, who is the Republican representing District 135. Sam Fedeli is a former coordinator of Move to Amend Rochester, and he's been working on issues related to money and politics. And Blair Horner's on the line with us, the legislative director of the New York State Public Interest Research Group. Hi, Blair.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. We just heard from Susan Lerner in our first half hour, Common Cause NY, saying yes to a pay raise if it's tied to hard caps on outside income and ethics reform. Where do you come down on this?
Well, I mean, you know, as you mentioned in the lead into me coming onto your show, and by the way, thank you again.
Sure.
The lawmakers haven't had a pay raise in nearly two decades, and I think that most New Yorkers would think two decades without a pay raise is a long time. The question really is, what does the pay raise look like, and what this commission is contemplating is a nearly 50% hike in pay, which would make New York lawmakers by far the highest paid lawmakers, state lawmakers in the country. And given what's happened in Albany, I think most New Yorkers would think they don't deserve to be the highest paid lawmakers in the country. And therefore, you know, if they get a pay raise, it should be something smaller than that. It shouldn't be a 50% hike.
Blair, I want to get your take on a couple of things our listeners have said, and our guests in studio will weigh in as well. Thomas writes to us on Twitter and says, ethics reforms being meaningful and transparent means a pay raise would be okay after the reforms have come into place and have proven to work. In other words, we shouldn't see anything happen by November 15th, because every year the governor says we have new ethics legislation. The governor has been very self-congratulatory in the last several years about ethics reform, Blair. I think if it were as meaningful as he has said every year for the last several years, then we wouldn't be talking about further reforms being necessary. And you've got Thomas on Twitter saying no raise until we get something really meaningful passed here, because this commission that's evaluating a possible raise is doing so independently of ethics reform, that it's going to be up to the law, to legislators, to get that done. Do you agree that we're rushing too quickly on this pay raise and that it should be contingent upon reform?
Well, I mean, the reason they created a commission was to sort of depoliticize pay raises. One of the reasons why they haven't had one in 20 years is governors usually link the pay raise to something they want. Last time around, the governor Pataki linked it to, among other things, the creation of charter schools, which he hadn't been able to get passed in the legislature, and so he wanted to throw that in as part of a deal. So they create a commission. They said it was independent. It's not really. They're all directly appointed by the governor, the legislative leaders, and the chief judge, all of whom have a vested interest in seeing a pay raise. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that have to be done. I agree with the callers or the comment that this should be, that they should have done ethics reform first. It didn't happen, largely due to the failure of the governor to sort of raise the issue in the months after the budget was done. He just let it slide for 2 months and then threw something in at the last minute and got a deal done that had almost nothing to do with the corruption in Albany. So I am totally with your listeners who are frustrated with the lack of action at the state capitol when it comes to cleaning the corruption up, which seems to just not stop. Even the latest revelations about what's going on in the executive branch should give everyone pause about what should be done to clean up Albany. Albany should get cleaned up. The stables should get cleaned out. That should be the top priority, not talking about whether or not there's a pay raise.
All right, Blair, but one more follow-up with you before I turn to our guests in studio. On that issue of cleaning, as you say, cleaning up Albany at all levels, you know, we've been talking about what our priorities would be. Nobody gets everything they want in a year, but what tops the list to you? What are the rocks to move uphill that would really start to clean things up?
Well, I mean, part of it is, it sounded like you already talked about it with Susan before, you know, the way the Congress deals with it is they limit outside income to a certain amount, and that arguably, and we believe does, limit the temptation to use your public office for private personal gain, and that is at the heart of many of the corruption scandals that have occurred. What ultimately it comes down to is someone has to enforce the law, and one of the reasons why it's this Wild West in Albany is until Preet-Bharara showed up, no one was worried that even if they got caught, then anybody would punish them. And so a critical component of this is truly independent enforcement of the law, and we can't rely on Preet-Bharara being around forever. In fact, his term ends at the end of this calendar year. So I would say independent enforcement. I think the caps on outside income make a lot of sense, and I think a meaningful campaign finance reform so that special interests that really are the puppeteers that too often control what happens in Albany get some of those strings cut.
Assemblyman Johns, he's bringing up Preet-Bharara. It's almost like we who are not in Albany envision this state capital where the lawmakers are now concerned about a Kaiser Sose-like figure that may come for them eventually. I mean, how much of that is sort of drummed up, or how much is a real concern about what he's been doing?
Well, the U.S. Attorney Preet-Bharara has done this state a big favor by pointing out what's wrong and actually talking a little bit about what's wrong, why it's wrong, how to fix it, which is basically what I campaign on. Keep in mind, we in the last 12 years, now I'm for 12-year term limits, but in the last 12 years, we put about 40 members of the legislature in prison. I guess they're making some real nice license plates, but the reality is that we don't need to have more members going to prison. We need to have members with a term limit. As Blair has pointed out to me down in Albany, you know, when they did campaign finance reform in New York City, a 6-to-1 matching campaign finance fund, they actually included term limits too. And I always say if there was 12-year term limits, Sheldon Silver wouldn't be looking at a 12-year prison term.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And so you want a total of 12 years in the same state office, yes?
In the same office, right. It doesn't preclude you from running for governor, from running for state senate, Congress, whatever. But you know what? If you're going to pass gambling casino legislation, every now and then the people want you to shuffle the cards, right? So I'm just saying if you want to be a career politician and you want to start out when you're 28 versus when you're 58, okay, fine, but understand that you're only going to do at the most 12 years in one position, and then you better look for your next opportunity.
Now, let me ask Sam Fedeli on tying this question to money in politics. There's this idea that if there are no term limits, that power protects power, and that money is used to help entrench an interest and entrench an office, because if you can keep that office, you've got a job for maybe the rest of your life. And the idea being, if there's a term limit, that you are more likely to, quote unquote, and let's get like sort of super soft and gushy here, do what's right, or whatever you view sort of the optimal situation for the voters, as opposed to protecting yourself. That money in politics is going to have less of an influence if there are term limits. Do you agree with that?
Well, I've actually seen studies that come out 180 degrees opposed to each other. One study, I can't tell you what organization did it, said that with term limits, very short term limits, the time to job as lobbyist is shortened. So during that first term, instead of working for the people, the elected official might want to work for his next employer instead. So the argument works both ways. My concern is more with who comes to elected office to begin with. Right now, the system is so aversive to most people that it acts as a huge filter. So we get a real small sample of the population who even want to entertain the thought of serving the public. I doubt if you see many college counselors talking to students about a career in government. And it's we ignore the fact that government is so important. It's where all our major collective decisions are made. Will we have war? Will we have peace? Will we maintain the infrastructure? Will we keep the economy going? All of these decisions are made by these individuals. So we want to do something to attract the best and the brightest. And right now the system is so aversive that we're not doing that.
All right, well, one of our listeners, Jack, emailed on exactly this subject. And let me preface this by saying, Sam, I can recall as a kid thinking, boy, my dad, of course, we kind of idolize our parents. And I looked up to my father and I said, you know, you seem built for politics. Why not? And I'll never forget what he said. He said, you know, Ev, idealistic people who get into politics, two things happen. They get beaten down and they quit, or they become what they despise. And I said, okay, that's kind of a harsh way to look at it, but I understood why he felt that way. And here's an email from a listener named Jack who says, attracting better people does require higher pay. It's time for a significant increase. Don't we want the best people running for office? So Jack is, and this listener named Jack, is endorsing the idea of a big pay raise, saying we want higher caliber people. We want people to say, hey, that's a dollar figure that I'd like to work for. That's a good job. That's something to do. So on those grounds, Sam, he's saying, yes, pay raise. That will be helpful.
But money is just the base. In order to attract, I mean, you can ask yourself what it would take for you as an individual to want a job in government as an elected official. Money is only a part of it. I think the pressures that people like Mark work under today are just too much. They're certainly too much for me. So a lot of the arcane rules that we find in our chambers need to be changed to make that environment better. People like recognition for what they do. And we have no idea what our elected officials do from day to day. It would be nice if we had some kind of mechanism where there were progress reports issued on, say, a monthly basis, so we know what they do with their time from day to day. We need the public's perception of government to improve, obviously. And I feel this way because of a letter that I read that was written by Thomas Jefferson to John Adams in 1813, where he talks about the aristocracy taking over government and returning to a situation that we had under the crown. And he said what we need to seek out instead are natural aristocrats, people who have talent and virtues, and attract them to public office. And provisions should be made in government to do that. And we have not done that, and we need to.
Okay. Mark Johns, what do you say to our listener named Jack who said higher salary attracts higher quality, higher caliber people to the job, and that's a good thing?
Well, we're the third highest paid legislature in the country, so I don't know that a big pay raise most people would agree with. Secondly, if someone is morally corrupt, they may gravitate towards those type of jobs anyway, because that's where, you know, the old saying in New York is they don't tolerate corruption, they demand it. And the problem is, they say, look, if you won't go along to get along, which everybody's heard the phrase, go along to get along, what is that about? It's about getting stipends for being a majority in the majority party and chairing a committee. You get extra money for that. You wind up with a lot more campaign money to run your campaign. Without term limits, your most important goal is to get reelected. So, and to get reelected, you need the money. So I'm talking about reforming the system from the bottom up. If someone is, if someone is corrupt or devoid of moral values, I don't really want them in office, campaign finance reform, term limits, or anything else. I mean, if a person, an individual, is not morally straight, then I don't know that we need them there. And keep in mind, as I said, every bill that comes up, the majority makes sure that it passes with majority members, majority support. And when you look at all major decisions, the budget comes into mind, but other decisions is three men in a room. Well, let's at least put a camera in that room so we can see what's going on. And we have 213 members of the state legislature. How about just 75? Save $150 million a year.
All right, Blair, you want to weigh in on any of those suggestions along with term limits? Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I understand. I appreciate the comment that higher pay may attract higher people when it comes to their ethical concern or public service concerns. But, you know, I have to admit I'm somewhat skeptical on that. I mean, if that were the case, then we wouldn't have seen all the things we saw on Wall Street a few years ago.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Those guys are getting paid big bucks, and what did? They just ran the economy off the cliff.
Yeah, good
so
point.
So I think what motivates most people to behave is they know if they get caught, they could get punished. That they could get caught, and if they do, they get punished. And that's what's missing in Albany. The only watchdogs are controlled by the people that are supposed to be getting monitored. And until you create an independent system with real police powers to go after these people that are bad, people are going to misbehave. And that we have an honor system in Albany. It clearly has not worked. And what we really need to focus on is coming up with a system that is as independent as humanly possible from the political elite that runs the state capitol.
That Wall Street comparison is an interesting one that I had not thought of, but it is true that, first of all, money was not a reason for people to want to keep their jobs and behave ethically. They found ways to make more money, even if it meant creating instruments that would blow up in 2 or 3 years, because, the next point, tying to Blair's point, they knew they could make an additional $5-10 million. They'd have this parachute, and they wouldn't go to jail, and that people would be hurt, but they wouldn't. And that's exactly what they did in Wall Street.
You know, and Evan, that's a good point, because those credit default swaps, which they were trading down on Wall Street, was basically things backed by home mortgages.
Yeah.
And they were handing out those home mortgages to people that couldn't afford them. You knew it was going to go down. And what happens?
But you could make money in the short run.
Exactly. People made money. Brokers made money. As Bernie says, Wall Street and the big banks did very well. And then what happens when it goes downhill? The big money that finances the campaigns gets bailed out. We bailed them out to a tune of $100 billion. This is coming out of the taxpayer's pocket. Who's going to bail you out when you don't make your home payment?
No, I take that point. And so let me just kind of probe on, well, let me get one more quick listener email in, and I want to kind of go back to a point that Sam Fedeli was raising. But Peter writes to us from Henrietta. He says, Evan, one justification for a legislative pay raise is the high cost of living in the New York City area. Can there be a different pay tier so that pay for New York City area legislators is higher? Thank you, Peter. That's similar to the suggestion of different minimum wages for different parts of the state. Blair, I'm not sure that would fly very far with most voters or commissioners, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, different commissioners get paid different salaries in New York State. I mean, the health commissioner gets paid more than the agriculture commissioner, and so I mean, on the executive branch side, you can clearly do it. I would have to take a look at the state constitution as to whether or not you're allowed to have a variable salary for state lawmakers. But that would be that to me. I think it would be a constitutional question, because in upstate New York, you know, $80,000 a year is not at all suffering. But in Manhattan, those lawmakers that are making $80,000 a year, it's very tight for them because it's much more expensive. That being said, you know, the corruption that we've seen at the state capitol has come from all different regions of the state. And so I'm very sympathetic to people deserving a salary increase after 20 years. I just happen not to think that they should be the highest paid in the country. Secondly, the problem we have in Albany is not about, in my opinion, is not about their public service salaries. It's about a failure of oversight, lousy laws, and a incentive to, you know, sort of pay to play. And so all of those things, I think, create the corruption that we see in the Capitol. And it's not really about salaries. We've seen lawmakers who have been here for one term get into trouble. We've seen lawmakers who have been here for 20 terms get into trouble. It doesn't seem related to the salaries. And this is where I disagree with Mark on the term limits. While I think it would have the effect of churning, which is probably a good thing, most of the lawmakers that are here are not here at more than 10 years or so. And as I mentioned before, some of the new guys who got here got into trouble right away.
And kind of closing the loop on pay raises, Blair, is it cowardly to hold this deadline after Election Day?
Well, I think whoever wrote the law thought it was smart. We urged in our testimony to the commission, the law doesn't say anything that they have to release it on November 15th. They said it can't be released after November 15th. Our call on the commission is release your recommendations before the election,
sure,
and let the voters have a say in ultimately what the pay should be.
Yeah, well, but we can all say good luck with that, right?
I mean, well, you know, that's my job, right? I'm the patron saint of lost causes.
I like that title. That's going to be your official title when you get introduced on this program, hence thus forth. All right. So I want to revisit one thing that Sam Fedeli brought up, though, that I think is important. Sam is bringing up an idea or at least generally speaking, that he wants to see a change that would attract people who are, I think, more idealistic, more desiring to see government work for people as opposed to protecting, you know, a lifetime job, protecting interests. But are there specific ways here, Sam? I mean, you've studied this thing a long time. It's easy to be cynical about this kind of a question.
I think way number one, Evan, and I think it's probably 90% of the problem, is the electoral process. Most people just do not have the heart or the desire to expose themselves to what one needs to expose themselves to go through this process. And the biggest problem there, obviously, is the money-raising part. People generally don't like to beg for money. So if a lot of money is required to gain a particular office, especially at the federal level, then that's what one needs to do. So those people are taken out. They're out of the job market. They just will not even approach elected office at the congressional level. So we have a lot of good candidates who could potentially do it, but because we have a process that's so onerous, they won't. And that doesn't even talk to the fact that it also engenders that indebtedness after they're elected.
Okay. Blair Horner, what do you think of that?
Well, I understand, again, I don't want to sound always contrarian on this, but the vast majority of the legislators that I deal with at the state capitol are in the good category. The problem, you see, is when they are surrounded by people who are making money hand over fist, either as lobbyists or the minority of legislators or members of the executive branch that are cashing in on their public office, it creates the perverse incentive to behave more like them. And that's what has to change. Most of the people who come up here, the vast majority of them that come up here, are coming up here to do, you know, to do their thing and to try to do what their constituents want them to do. It's not every single person up here is corrupt. That's absolutely my opinion anyway. Certainly not the case. There's a real problem up here, but unfortunately we're not focusing enough on how to solve the problem of the bad apples. What happens in Albany is they try to come up with packages that make it seem like they're dealing with the real problem, and they're not really. And that's why, as you mentioned early on in our conversation, that the governor has talked about these reforms now year after year after year, and nothing changes. The reason is no one's willing to tackle the tough issues to make the system work better, and that's the problem. Although I agree that when you're raising campaign contributions, large campaign contributions from wealthy interests or powerful interest groups, you create a transactional culture that can also create perverse incentives down the road.
So in a word, Blair, you didn't think I was being uncharitable to the governor when I said he's been rather self-congratulatory when it comes to ethics reform in the last several years.
I might use different words, but I think that the governor was spinning and not really. The rhetoric of reform sounded good. The reality was far short of what the state needs.
One more listener comment. Cynthia emails the program. She says, Evan, there's something that no one has been talking about, which is that outside income is always a problem when it's a lawyer. We should ban outside income for legal work when someone is in office. Isn't that what Sheldon Silver was doing? Thank you, Cynthia. And the answer is yes with Sheldon Silver. And I understand her point. I don't know if you could do it that way. Mark Johns, what do you think of Cynthia's remark about her concern about legal work always being the problem for outside income?
I'd like to see a cap on outside income, period. Okay. I take no outside income. I'll tell you, the district I represent, Webster, Penfield, Perrington, Fairport, East Rochester, is the most independent voting district in the state. It's always in the top one, two, or three for percentage of turnout. They pay attention. That's the only reason why I got reelected. So if I get reelected time after time, I'm going to keep talking about these issues until we get a consensus throughout the state.
All right, Sam, Cynthia's remark about lawyers, ban legal work.
Well, it's not only lawyers, obviously. If you're a legislator and you have an insurance agency and you sit there and you vote on insurance legislation, or if you have, if you own a lot of real estate and you're sitting there, if it came out that the San Francisco 49er team was paying the refs, I think it would be a national scandal. Yet we live in a situation where we have legislators who are being paid and then ruling on the people, the interest of those who gave them money.
And we've just become normal. It's become normalized.
Right. It's normalized. Yeah. We accept it. It would be scandalous in sports.
Thank you for being here, Sam. It's always nice talking to you.
Good talking to you.
Sam Fedele, former coordinator of Move to Amend Rochester. Assemblyman Mark Johns, thank you. Nice seeing you in studio. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having me.
And Blair Horner is the patron saint of lost causes and the legislative director of NYPIRG. Blair, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Evan. Take care.
All right. Short break and more connections coming straight ahead.